Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, September 18, 2020. Sudanese rebels arrive in Khartoum.
We came to see it with the people in the different places and the regions to explain to them that how far the Juba Peace Agreement will help them, and the Juba Peace Agreement itself, how he can help the people economically, politically.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A rebel delegation from the Sudanese Revolutionary Front is in Khartoum to meet with the transitional government and other political forces to discuss the comprehensive peace agreement signed in Juba last month. The 36-member delegation is headed by Yasir Arman, who was once asked to leave Sudan. The group is expected to travel to Darfur, southern Kordofan, Blue Nile, and eastern Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The delegation headed by Arman, deputy chairman of the SPLM North Malik Agar faction, arrived Thursday afternoon in Khartoum from Juba. Officials with the Sudanese Revolutionary Front, a coalition of nine armed groups, are scheduled to meet with top officials of the transitional government and members of the Forces for Freedom and Change coalition, then travel to the conflict zones to speak to the public about the Juba-mediated peace agreement. Nimir Muhammad Abdurrahman, the deputy head of the delegation, tells South Sudan in Focus, "It feels good to be back home after more than 17 years in exile." He says the group's presence in Khartoum demonstrates that peace has become a reality in Sudan.
We came to see it with the people in the different places and the regions to explain to them that how far the Juba Peace Agreement will help them, and the Juba Peace Agreement itself, how he can help the people economically, politically. We have been listening and seeing the security situation in Darfur. It is just very terrible.
The Transitional Government and the Sudanese Revolutionary Front, or SRF, signed an agreement late last month in Juba, ending years of fighting in the Darfur and Blue Nile regions. Abdurrahman says he believes the peace deal addresses all issues that made rebel fighters take up arms against Khartoum's government.
We discussed all the issues. The most important for us to address the root cause of the problems. But we think that we need all the people to come together. Abdulaziz Al-Hilu, Abdul Wahid from Darfur, and the rest of the people to come and to help us to join hands and then to work together. Peace is for all. And we think that the environment in Sudan now is completely different.
Abdurrahman says after meeting with their counterparts in the transitional government, SRF officials will travel to Darfur, South Kordofan, Blue Nile, and Eastern Sudan to talk about the peace agreement with citizens. He says the agreement provides for the safe return of all refugees and IDPs to Sudan and grants them equal status as citizens.
They will return to their original home safely, and we also going to provide to them security and everything where they need to go back to their homes. What is most important to the whole Sudanese, Juba Peace Agreement will change Sudan. Sudan will not be like the past. They will change Sudan forever, will be a country for equal citizenship right, and will be a democratic state.
Speaking to reporters during a briefing at Sudan's news agency building in Khartoum last night, Mariam Sadiq al-Mahdi, a leader with the Forces for Freedom and Change coalition, welcomed the delegation to Sudan and said she supports the group's decision to discuss the deal with the people in the war-affected parts of the country. Al-Mahdi says it is time all Sudanese feel safe where they live without fear of being attacked or targeted based on religion, ethnicity, or political affiliation.
So we are all in one picture. We all act as guards to protect it, and our thoughts should be inclusive about the meaning of peace. We need a peace that would allow every citizen to feel safe, a peace that would help in the safe return of refugees and IDPs into their homes, a peace that would relieve the burden of economic and political marginalization.
Two holdout groups, the SPLM North faction led by General Abdulaziz Al-Hilu and Sudan Liberation Movement faction led by Abdulwahid Mohamed Nur, have yet to reach a comprehensive peace agreement with the government. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok and the SPLM North faction led by Abdulaziz Al-Hilu have agreed in principle to continue meeting in Juba and develop a roadmap that lays out a methodology for negotiations. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
5 young artists were sentenced to 2 months in prison for what authorities in Sudan called public annoyance. Some Sudanese activists criticized the ruling, saying it reminded them of former President Omar al-Bashir's administration that undermined freedom of association and arts. A defense lawyer says he will appeal against the ruling. For VOA News, Nabil Biaju reports from Washington.
Lawyer Ahmed Saber represents 28-year-old artist Dua Parik Muhammad Ahmed and 4 of her colleagues. He says while the young artists were rehearsing at an art studio in Khartoum last month, some neighbors complained about the noise and physically assaulted Ahmed and her friends. When police arrived on the scene, they only arrested the artist even though they were being beaten by a mob. Saber says a judge in Central Khartoum Primary Court found Ahmed and her colleagues guilty of causing public annoyance and disturbing public safety and tranquility, 2 articles under Sudan's criminal law.
Based on those, they sentenced them to 2 months in prison plus a fine of 5,000 Sudanese pounds. If you don't pay the fine, you serve another month in prison consecutively. They were transferred to prison and Dua was sent to the women's prison in Omdurman.
Halal Karib, a member of the executive committee of the Sudanese Women's Union, says the ruling was biased against Ahmed because of her gender and says the legal language used to convict the 5 is murky.
It's not well defined and it led the judge and the police and all the security people to say this is annoying and this is not annoying. And on the other hand, there is a lot of violence happened to Dua and her friends inside the police station.
Al-Karib and Saber say Ahmed was physically assaulted at the police station and denied access to medical care for the injuries she sustained. Sudan's transitional government needs to reform the country's security sector and should reform law enforcement's sweeping powers, according to Al-Karib.
The security men and all the security sections need a real modification to suit this transitional period and our ways to democracy. The transitional period after 1 year the change is still now working by the hands of the previous regime.
Saber says the judgment against Ahmed and her friends was flawed and did not follow due process. He says the defense team will appeal and try to get the ruling overturned.
We are going to appeal the ruling, and I think we have enough to go on. In addition, we will get access to the case file to know what circumstantial evidence the judge based his ruling on so that we can challenge it.
Al-Karib says the Islamist ideology of ousted longtime President Omar al-Bashir still controls Sudan's judiciary and law enforcement. Her organization is calling for the immediate release of all 5 artists through the engagement of higher levels of Sudan's judiciary. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Khartoum, we move to South Sudan, where some former senior government officials are farming to grow their own food. Former Defense Minister Kwal Manyang Juk says farming can provide employment for young men and women in South Sudan. The former governor of the defunct Jubek State, who is also farming, says he believes large-scale farming can lead to local food production. For VOA News, Manyang David Maya reports from Juba.
Former Defense Minister Kwal Manyang Juk sits under a tree in the middle of his 400 Faidan or 415-acre farm, located about 3 kilometers outside of Juba, and points to one of his crops.
Using the young maize, and for 100 Faidan of maize here, and the others are there. And we are continuing. The sweet potato. Yeah. This is the Irish potato. Eggplant. One, two, three, these are thousands. And we'll supply the Juba city with fruits now.
Wiping sweat from his brow, Duke says it is only when South Sudanese are able to produce enough food for everyone that sustainable peace will be restored in South Sudan.
I believe this is the only way, the most effective way of silencing the guns. Whatever we do, we do, we do, and we have not addressed the issue of livelihood of the people. For them themselves to produce, then that will not be successful. We must address the reason why they have taken up the guns. They took up the guns so that they have something to eat. They grab from others. Now the politicians are exploiting that. They say, these are my people, and if you don't give me this position in the government, I'll continue fighting.
Duke says, once that person is given a government position, he forgets about the people. Peace without work will not put food on the table, says Duke. So it is important for people to take advantage of the little peace there is now to grow food.
And we tell our people to go and farm because the land is there, but they don't understand it. So I thought of myself, instead of telling people to go and farm, then myself I take the lead. And this way we are co-leaders. A leader must have to lead.
Duke, who has held several senior positions in government since 2006, is not alone in spearheading food production in the country. Augustine Jadala, former governor of the now defunct Jubek State, says he believes people should engage in large-scale farming to ensure that South Sudanese eat locally produced food rather than relying on imported goods.
We want to make economic revolution through agriculture. Our economy is weak because we are importing everything from outside. But if we cultivate and we produce food from here, we will allow the hard currency to prevail in this country and strengthen our economy.
A month ago, South Sudan's central bank said it had run out of foreign reserves. South Sudanese pounds has continued to lose value against the dollar. Today, the dollar exchanges for 500 South Sudanese pounds on the black market. Jadala lost his job earlier this year when President Salva Kiir agreed to revert back to the previous 10 states. Jadala says at that time he immediately decided to pick up a hoe instead of a gun and went to work cultivating a farm in the bush.
I grew up in the war. When I completed my secondary school, I joined Sudan Military College. So I was in Sudan Military College until 92, when we made coup here in Juba and we joined SPLA. I went to fight because of the cause. We have objectives. So job is a time and is a chance. Now time come, the leaders will say, you go home and then let us try somebody. I cannot regard.
Like Duke, Jadala has planted maize and groundnuts. Both men say they fear floods or armyworms could wipe out some of their crops this season. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, how are UN peacekeepers viewed in Africa? That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you help someone dealing with depression?
I just give my time to that person and we discuss matter concerning that depression which that person is facing.
First of all, I'll find out what is depressing that person. And when I find out the root cause, of course, I try to advise the person according to what he or she is going through.
By counseling the person through counseling and then sharing ideas. Maybe sometimes going out for football or watching football, movies, such things can also help.
I recommend music, the music therapy. Music therapy in the sense that music has a way of giving a soothing feeling whenever the person listens to music.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the Public Interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the Public Interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Cameroon is sending 750 troops to the Central African Republic to protect civilians and build peace ahead of December elections. The troops under the UN's Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission have just finished UN-led training in the eastern border village of Mochebom, from where Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports.
A Cameroonian military band plays in the eastern village of Mochebom to mark the end of UN-led training for peacekeeping troops. The troops are to be deployed within weeks under the UN's Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission MINUSCA to the Central African Republic CAR. Cameroon's Defense Minister Joseph Betty Asomo says the troops would foster peace for the CAR's December elections. He says they would protect civilians, election staff, their materials, international observers, and refugees returning to the CAR.
Le chef de l'État.
Asomo says besides the troops, Cameroon's President Paul Biya has made available logistical support for the Blue Beret battalions and two trained police units. He says they will serve for 1 year within MINUSCA. The UN has asked Cameroon's troops to help the CAR out of its security and socio-political turmoil by enabling citizens to rebuild destroyed institutions. Years of political instability and fighting between armed groups have displaced nearly a quarter of the Central African Republic's people. Since 2014, there were more than 11,000 UN peacekeepers in CAR, over 1,000 of them from Cameroon. Lieutenant Seke Dibumbe said Cameroon's peacekeeping troops were well trained and ready for the mission.
The first phase was the general knowledge on UN system and UN peacekeeping operations. We went through the second, that was developing the individual aptitude, that was through communication skills, military communication skills, first aid, marksmanship, that's maintain and use of the weapons.
But while UN-led troops have helped establish a degree of stability, armed groups control much of the country. Albert Nseke is a conflict resolution specialist at the University of Bangui. He says the task for Cameroon peacekeepers is huge because despite an arms embargo imposed by the UN, rebel groups continue to acquire weapons. Nseke says the rebel groups intend to disrupt the elections expected at the end of this year to maintain their control of positions within the Central African Republic. The CAR's former president, Francois Bozize, who last year returned from exile in Uganda, challenged President Faustin Archange Touadéra in July for the top office. Bozize took power in 2003 coup, only to be overthrown in 2013 by Seleka rebels. French troops helped to defeat the rebels and ushered in the Central African Republic's last elections in 2016. But the UN says at least a dozen armed groups continue to fight over territory and resources throughout the country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Mutebum, Eastern Cameroon.
Uganda's prison authorities and security agencies are searching for over 200 inmates who escaped from a maximum security prison in northeastern Karamoja region. Authorities on Thursday said they captured 9 and killed 3 of the prisoners who were partly motivated to escape by fear of contracting COVID-19 in the overcrowded prison. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
Police, army, and prison personnel are combing Uganda's Mountain Moroto area, searching for the inmates who have been on the loose since Wednesday. The inmates were among 219 prisoners who fled the Moroto prison in Uganda's semi-arid region of Karamoja. Frank Waine, the Uganda prison spokesperson, explains to VOA how the mass escape was carried out.
It happened when the prisoners who are carrying food were coming in. And then they were raided the gatekeeper. Then, of course, a group from inside joined in, overpowered the gatekeeper, broke the armory, removed the guns, broke the main gate, and started scattering. So we only have about 9, and the search is still continuing.
This is Uganda's third largest prison escape since 2006, when 500 inmates fled a facility in the West Nile region of Arua district. Another 300 escaped a prison in Adjumani district in northern Uganda. Uganda's prisons house more than 61,000 inmates, and many of its facilities are overcrowded. The prisoners have not been spared from the coronavirus that officials say has infected 5,380 Ugandans and caused 60 deaths nationwide. Waine says some prisoners in the Moroto facility were diagnosed with the infection and that 4 staffers were under quarantine. Many more inmates have tested positive throughout the country.
The number is about 511 and about 14 staff. But the good thing is that our people are all asymptomatic. Actually, about 153 have already recovered.
Waine says officials have increased vigilance around prisons to ensure there are no more mass breakouts as they focus on capturing the escapees from the Moroto facility. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
A UN watchdog group reports gross violations of human rights, many of which could amount to crimes against humanity, continue unabated in Burundi despite a change of leadership. The Commission of Inquiry on Burundi, which was appointed 4 years ago, will submit its just-launched final report to the Human Rights Council next week. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
During the past 4 years, the 3-member panel has been the only independent international mechanism to document, monitor, and report on human rights violations in Burundi. The panel is concerned that this oversight will disappear when it ends its mandate. It is urging continued international scrutiny of Burundi's human rights record. Hopes were raised conditions in the country might change for the better under the newly installed government of Evariste Ndayishimiye, who was elected president following the death of former president Pierre Nkurunziza. However, president of the commission, Dudu Dien, tells VOA, people appointed to key positions in the government have been identified by the commission, international NGOs, and the European Union as having been responsible for human rights violations.
It means that those who have been committing the violation are still in position of power. The majority of the new authorities are from the military section of the country. So which means that the military has the preeminent position, and this is not certainly the best criteria for a democratic country.
The report notes relatively little political violence occurred in the lead-up to the country's general election in May. Commission member Françoise Hampson attributes this largely to international scrutiny of the event. But she says this period of calm has ended.
In recent weeks, there have continued to be killings. There have continued to be arbitrary detention, and there have continued to be disappearances. So it's slightly surprisingly, perhaps, it's continuing as it was, even though the elections are finished. And that is a matter of very grave concern.
Hampson calls this a missed opportunity. Because there has been a change of political leadership, she says it would have been easier for the new government to change direction for the better without losing face. The commission's final report is based on more than 1,500 testimonies collected since the start of its work, including more than 300 during the current term of office. The report has been sent to the government, who, as of Thursday, had not responded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Friday. We now take you to Sudan for some music by Saif al-Jamaa.
شفتها وين يا عسلية العينين تشبهي واحدة شفتها وين يا عسلية العينين أنا صادفتك انتي زمان يا انتي زمان أنا صادفتك انتي زمان يا انتي زمان وهسي نسيت اسمك مين اسمك مين
listening to Saif al-Jamaa from Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.